But the sun, now climbing towards the south, was veiled in the reeks of Mordor, and through a threatening haze it gleamed, remote, a sullen red, as if it were the ending of the day, or the end, maybe, of all the world of light. And out of the gathering murk the Nazgul came with their cold voices, crying words of death, and then all hope was quenched. Pippin had bowed, crushed with horror, when he heard Gandalf reject the terms and doom Frodo to the torment of the tower. But he had mastered himself, and now he stood beside Beregond in the front rank of Gondor with Imrahil's men. For it seemed best to him to die soon and leave the bitter story of his life, since all was in ruin. "I wish Merry was here," he heard himself saying, and quick thoughts raced through his mind, even as he watched the enemy come charging to the assault. "Well, well, now at any rate I understand poor Denethor a little better. We might die together, Merry and I, and since die we must, why not? Well, as he's not here, I hope he'll find an easier end, but now I must do my best." He drew his sword and looked at it, and the intertwining shapes of red and gold and the flowing characters of Numenor glinted like fire upon the blade. "This was made for just such an hour," he thought. "If only I could smite that foul messenger with it, then almost I should draw level with old Merry. Well, I'll smite some of this beastly brood before the end. I wish I could see cool sunlight and green grass again." Then, even as he thought these thoughts, the first assault crashed into them. The orcs, hindered by the mires that lay before the hills, halted and poured their arrows into the defending ranks. But through them there came striding up, roaring like beasts, a great company of hill-trolls out of Gorgoroth. Taller and broader than men they were, and they were clad only in close-fitting mesh of horny scales, or maybe that was their hideous hide. But they bore round bucklers huge and black, and wielded heavy hammers in their knotted hands. Reckless they sprang into the pools and waded across, bellowing as they came. Like a storm they broke upon the line of the men of Gondor, and beat upon helm and head, and arm and shield as smiths hewing the hot bending iron. At Pippin's side Beregond was stunned and overborne, and he fell. And the great troll chief that smote him down bent over him, reaching out a clutching claw, for these fell creatures would bite the throats of those that they threw down. Then Pippin stabbed upwards, and the written blade of Westerness pierced through the hide and went deep into the vitals of the troll, and his black blood came gushing out. He toppled forward and came crashing down like a falling rock, burying those beneath him. Blackness and stench and crushing pain came upon Pippin, and his mind fell away into a great darkness. "So it ends as I guessed it would," his thought said, even as it fluttered away. And it laughed a little within him ere it fled. Almost gay it seemed to be casting off at last all doubt and care and fear. And then, even as it winged away into forgetfulness, it heard voices, and they seemed to be crying in some forgotten world far above, "The eagles are coming! The eagles are coming!" For one moment more Pippin's thought hovered. "Bilbo," it said. "But no, that came in his tale, long, long ago. This is my tale, and it is ended now. Goodbye." And his thought fled far away, and his eyes saw no more. Book 6. Chapter 1. The Tower of Kirithungol. Sam roused himself painfully from the ground. For a moment he wondered where he was, and then all the misery and despair returned to him. He was in the deep dark outside the undergate of the Orc's stronghold. Its brazen doors were shut. He must have fallen stunned when he hurled himself against them, but how long he'd lain there he didn't know. Then he'd been on fire, desperate and furious. Now he was shivering and cold. He crept to the doors and pressed his ears against them. Far within he could hear faintly the voices of orcs clamouring, but soon they stopped or passed out of hearing, and all was still. His head ached, and his eyes saw phantom lights in the darkness, but he struggled to steady himself and think. It was clear, at any rate, that he had no hope of getting into the Orkhold by that gate. He might wait there for days before it was opened, and he could not wait. Time was desperately precious. He no longer had any doubt about his duty. He must rescue his master or perish in the attempt. "The perishing is more likely, and will be a lot easier anyway," he said grimly to himself, as he sheathed Sting and turned from the brazen doors. Slowly he groped his way back in the dark along the tunnel, not daring to use the elven light. And as he went, he tried to fit together the events since Frodo and he had left the crossroads. He wondered what the time was. Somewhere between one day and the next, he supposed. But even of the days he had quite lost count. He was in a land of darkness, where the days of the world seemed forgotten, and where all who entered were forgotten too. "I wonder if they think of us at all," he said, "and what's happening to them all away there?" He waved his hand vaguely in the air before him, but he was, in fact, now facing southwards, as he came back to Shelob's tunnel, not west. Out westward in the world it was drawing to noon upon the 14th day of March in the Shire Reckoning, and even now Aragorn was leading the Black Fleet from Pelargir, and Merry was riding with the Rohirrim down the Stonewain Valley, while in Minas Tirith flames were rising and Pippin watched the madness growing in the eyes of Denethor. Yet amid all their cares and fear, the thoughts of their friends turned constantly to Frodo and Sam. They were not forgotten, but they were far beyond aid, and no thought could yet bring any help to Samwise, Hamfast's son. He was utterly alone. He came back at last to the stone door of the Orc Passage, and still unable to discover the catch or bolt that held it, he scrambled over as before and dropped softly to the ground. Then he made his way stealthily to the outlet of Shelob's tunnel, where the rags of her great web were still blowing and swaying in the cold airs. For cold they seemed to Sam after the noisome darkness behind, but the breath of them revived him. He crept cautiously out. All was ominously quiet. The light was no more than that of dusk at a dark day's end. The vast vapours that arose in Mordor and went streaming westward passed low overhead, a great welter of cloud and smoke now lit again beneath with the sullen glow of red. Sam looked up towards the Orc Tower, and suddenly, from its narrow windows, lights stared out like small red eyes. He wondered if there were some signal. His fear of the orcs, forgotten for a while in his wrath and desperation, now returned. As far as he could see, there was only one possible course for him to take. He must go on and try to find the main entrance to the dreadful tower, but his knees felt weak, and he found that he was trembling. Drawing his eyes down from the tower and the horns of the cleft before him, he forced his unwilling feet to obey him, and slowly, listening with all his ears, peering into the dense shadows of the rocks beside the way, he retraced his steps, past the place where Frodo fell, and still the stench of Shelob lingered, and then on and up, until he stood again in the very cleft where he had put on the ring and seen Shagrat's company go by. There he halted and sat down. For the moment he could drive himself no further. He felt that if once he went beyond the crown of the pass and took one step veritably down into the land of Mordor, that step would be irrevocable. He could never come back. Without any clear purpose, he drew out the ring and put it on again. Immediately he felt the great burden of its weight and felt afresh, but now more strong and urgent than ever, the malice of the Eye of Mordor, searching, trying to pierce the shadows that it had made for its own defence, but which now hindered it in its unquiet and doubt. As before, Sam found that his hearing was sharpened, but that to his sight the things of this world seemed thin and vague. The rocky walls of the path were pale, as if seen through a mist, but still at a distance he heard the bubbling of Shelob in her misery, and harsh and clear, and very close it seemed, he heard cries and the clash of metal. He sprang to his feet and pressed himself against the wall beside the road. He was glad of the ring, for here was yet another company of orcs on the march. Or so at first he thought. Then suddenly he realized that it was not so. His hearing had deceived him. The orc cries came from the tower, whose topmost horn was now right above him on the left hand of the cleft. Sam shuddered and tried to force himself to move. There was plainly some devilry going on. Perhaps in spite of all orders, the cruelty of the orcs had mastered them, and they were tormenting Frodo, or even savagely hacking him to pieces. He listened, and as he did, a gleam of hope came to him. There could not be much doubt. There was fighting in the tower. The orcs must be at war among themselves. Shagrat and Gorbag had come to blows. Faint as was the hope that his guess brought him, it was enough to rouse him. There might be just a chance. His love for Frodo rose above all other thoughts, and forgetting his peril, he cried aloud, "I'm coming, Mr. Frodo!" He ran forward to the climbing path, and over it. At once the road turned left and plunged steeply down. Sam had crossed into Mordor. He took off the ring, moved, it may be, by some deep premonition of danger, though to himself he thought only that he wished to see more clearly. "Better have a look at the worst," he muttered. "No good blundering about in a fog." Hard and cruel and bitter was the land that met his gaze. Before his feet, the highest ridge of the Efel Duath fell steeply in great cliffs down into a dark trough, on the further side of which there rose another ridge, much lower, its edge notched and jagged with crags like fangs that stood out black against the red light behind them. It was the grim Morgai, the inner ring of the fences of the land. Far beyond it, but almost straight ahead, across a wide lake of darkness dotted with tiny fires, there was a great burning glow. And from it rose in huge columns a swirling smoke, dusty red at the roots, black above where it merged into the billowing canopy that roofed in all the accursed land. Sam was looking at Orodruin, the mountain of fire. Ever and anon the furnaces far below its ashen cone would grow hot, and with a great surging and throbbing pour forth rivers of molten rock from chasms in its sides. Some would flow blazing towards Barad-dûr down great channels. Some would wind their way into the stony plain until they cooled and lay like twisted dragon shapes vomited from the tormented earth. In such an hour of labor Sam beheld Mount Doom, and the light of it, cut off by the high screens of the Efel Duath, from those who climbed up the path from the west, now glared against the stark rock faces, so that they seemed to be drenched with blood. In that dreadful light Sam stood aghast, for now, looking to his left, he could see the tower of Kirith Ungol in all its strength. The horn that he had seen from the other side was only its topmost turret. Its eastern face stood up in three great tiers from a shelf in the mountain wall far below. Its back was to a great cliff behind, from which it jutted out in pointed bastions, one above the other, diminishing as they rose, with sheer sides of cunning masonry that looked northeast and southeast. About the lowest tier, 200 feet below where Sam now stood, there was a battlemented wall enclosing a narrow court. Its gate, upon the near southeastern side, opened on a broad road, the outer parapet of which ran upon the brink of a precipice, until it turned southward and went winding down into the darkness to join the road that came over the Morgul Pass. Then on it went through a jagged rift in the Morgai, out into the valley of Gorgoroth and away to Barad-dûr. The narrow upper way on which Sam stood leapt swiftly down by stair and steep path to meet the main road under the frowning walls close to the tower gate. As he gazed at it, suddenly Sam understood, almost with a shock, that this stronghold had been built not to keep enemies out of Mordor, but to keep them in. It was indeed one of the works of Gondor long ago, an eastern outpost of the defences of Ithilien, made when, after the last alliance, men of Westerness kept watch on the evil land of Sauron where his creatures still lurked. But as with Narhost and Carhost, the Towers of the Teeth, so here too the vigilance had failed, and treachery had yielded up the tower to the Lord of the Ringwraiths, and now for long years it had been held by evil things. Since his return to Mordor, Sauron had found it useful, for he had few servants but many slaves of fear, and still its chief purpose as of old was to prevent escape from Mordor. Though if an enemy were so rash as to try to enter that land secretly, then it was also a last unsleeping guard against any that might pass the vigilance of Morgul and of Shelob. Only too clearly Sam saw how hopeless it would be for him to creep down under those many-eyed walls and pass the watchful gate. And even if he did so, he could not go far on the guarded road beyond. Not even the black shadows, lying deep where the red glow could not reach them, would shield him long from the night-eyed orcs. But desperate as that road might be, his task was now far worse, not to avoid the gate and escape, but to enter it alone. His thought turned to the ring, but there was no comfort there, only dread and danger. No sooner had he come in sight of Mount Doom, burning far away, than he was aware of a change in his burden. As it drew near the great furnaces where, in the deeps of time, it had been shaped and forged, the ring's power grew, and it became more fell, untamable save by some mighty will. As Sam stood there, even though the ring was not on him, but hanging by its chain about his neck, he felt himself enlarged, as if he were robed in a huge distorted shadow of himself, a vast and ominous threat halted upon the walls of Mordor. He felt that he had from now on only two choices, to forbear the ring, though it would torment him, or to claim it, and challenge the power that sat in its dark hold beyond the Valley of Shadows. Already the ring tempted him, gnawing at his will and reason. Wild fantasies arose in his mind, and he saw Samwise the Strong, hero of the age, striding with the flaming sword across the darkened land, and armies flocking to his call as he marched to the overthrow of Barad-dûr. And then all the clouds rolled away, and the white sun shone, and at his command the Vale of Gorgoroth became a garden of flowers and trees and brought forth fruit. He had only to put on the ring and claim it for his own, and all this could be. In that hour of trial, it was the love of his master that helped most to hold him firm. But also deep down in him lived still unconquered his plain hobbit sense. He knew in the core of his heart that he was not large enough to bear such a burden, even if such visions were not a mere cheat to betray him. The one small garden of a free gardener was all his need and due, not a garden swollen to a realm, his own hands to use, not the hands of others to command. "And anyway, all these notions are only a trick," he said to himself. "He'd spot me and cow me before I could so much as shout out. He'd spot me pretty quick if I put the ring on now, in Mordor. Well, all I can say is, things look as hopeless as a frost in spring. Just when being invisible would be really useful, I can't use the ring. And if ever I get any further, it's going to be nothing but a drag and a burden every step. So what's to be done?" He was not really in any doubt. He knew that he must go down to the gate and not linger any more. With a shrug of his shoulders, as if to shake off the shadow and dismiss the phantoms, he began slowly to descend. With each step he seemed to diminish. He had not gone far before he had shrunk again to a very small and frightened hobbit. He was now passing under the very walls of the tower, and the cries and sounds of fighting could be heard with his unaided ears. At the moment the noise seemed to be coming from the court behind the outer wall. Sam was about halfway down the path, when out of the dark gateway, into the red glow, there came two orcs running. They did not turn towards him. They were making for the main road, but even as they ran, they stumbled and fell to the ground and lay still. Sam had seen no arrows, but he guessed that the orcs had been shot down by others on the battlements or hidden in the shadow of the gate. He went on, hugging the wall on his left. One look upward had shown him that there was no hope of climbing it. The stonework rose 30 feet, without a crack or ledge, to overhanging courses like inverted steps. The gate was the only way. He crept on, and as he went he wondered how many orcs lived in the tower with Shagrat, and how many Gorbag had, and what they were quarrelling about, if that was what was happening. Shagrat's company had seemed to be about 40, and Gorbag's more than twice as large, but of course Shagrat's patrol had only been a part of his garrison. Almost certainly they were quarrelling about Frodo and the spoil.